Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jesse Horton, 19 years of public service, with 8 of those being a career backstep firefighter in the Nevada area. Jesse specializes in structural firefighting with a passion for leadership and mentorship. Jesse is also one of the owners and instructors of Horton's and Hunt, which is a fire service training company specializing in progressive fireground tactics and techniques. If his voice sounds familiar, it's because he's one of the hosts of the Undisclosed Agents Fire Podcast. The conversation between Jesse and I should hopefully spark some self-reflection with oneself and hopefully makes you ask, am I truly doing all I can within the fire service? With that, I present Mr. Jesse Horton.
All right, man. Hey, my name's Jesse Horton, and the first question you asked me was how I got into the fire service. I've told the story before, but it never loses its luster for me. I was late to the game when I got into the fire service. I was like 35 years old when I got in, and I had a good job. You know, leading up to it, I had life on the surface was good. I had a good job, bills were paid. You know, had a house and a Harley and a truck. You know, I was like, yeah, I don't, you know, live to work, I work to live, that kind of attitude, but I didn't really have any passion for what I was doing. That came into play with my brother getting a job, and he was a firefighter he's been in for over 20 years now. And he had a group of friends that were all firefighters, obviously, and I was always hanging out with those guys, and they were always telling me, come on, be a firefighter. And I was like, well, I don't want to go to paramedic school, because at the time you could not get in if you weren't a paramedic. And I just kind of hung out with these guys, and I wasn't really kind of into doing the firefighter thing for whatever reason. And then I watched my brother rise through the ranks and kind of become this a well-respected firefighter in the area. And then he got promoted to captain at a pretty young age. At the time, he was the youngest person to ever be promoted to captain in our department. And I saw how hard my dad pushed him. My dad was always like, you can do better. You know, you got to study for this test. You got to do this. You got to do that. And he would reach these milestones, and it would seem like my dad was proud of him, but he would just push him harder and just push him harder every time. And then I would watch the way my dad would be with me. And he was always very complimentary. Like, I'm so proud of you. You did such a good job, you know, and he never was really like pushing me. And one day, when my brother got promoted to captain, it kind of hit me. I was like, oh shit, I think my dad thinks I'm a loser. And like, this is the, I know it sounds funny, but it was like really emotionally impactful for me. I like realized that he saw this potential in my brother to do great things and go further. And he was kind of like, oh, well, at least you have a good job and your bills are paid with me. You know, I was not fulfilling my potential in his eyes. And that was a huge letdown for me personally. And I decided that day that I was going to make a change. So I went to EMT school, and I was the oldest guy in class. I sat next to my best bud, Austin Leck, who's on the job with us too. And we were the oldest dudes in class, you know, sitting in the back in our 30s at EMT basic school at a community college up here with a bunch of 18-year-old kids, and trying to get our feet wet doing that. Did all that. Went through the wildland portion of that college too. Again, youngest guy doing the S-130 stuff, getting all those certifications. Got that done. And then luckily there was a fire chief in place who was willing to take a risk on a guy who was an EMT basic and not a paramedic. And I got hired. I definitely, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I got hired because of my last name and who my brother and my father were. They took a chance on me, but I took that as I had to do good. I could not come in there and be a slapdick and half-ass this opportunity. I had to come in there and crush and put my nose to the grindstone. And I also felt that I was behind the eight ball as far as skill went, as far as the job went. I'm 35 years old. All my friends who were my brother's friends, these firefighters who were top tier dudes, like had all this experience and time on me, and I couldn't come in there and let them down. I couldn't come in there and be behind the curve. I couldn't come in there and just be some payday, 4 day guy. I had to come in and crush. So that's how I got in, and it's been pedal to the metal ever since.
All right. Awesome. Love it. Was your dad a firefighter?
My dad was not a firefighter. My dad was a public service or a public works director for a long time here in the city that we live and work in. And he was like the emergency manager for the city for a long time. So, not the emergency manager, but he managed the emergencies within the city. So, he did a lot of inner workings with the fire department. And we did a lot of hand-in-hand stuff as far as training went. But my grandfather, his dad was a firefighter. So,
So it's safe to say that you're like second generation.
I would say that it's in the family. I don't know. We skipped a generation there though. So yeah.
And your brother is older than you, correct?
No, my brother's younger than me,
Your
and that's
brother's
another.
younger.
Yeah, that's another thing I watched. Like, I was out there kind of a couple years ahead of him. I'm 2 and some change older than him years, and I was out there doing my thing, and he's just grinding the whole time, right? Wild land, getting this job, getting hired in the, structure side at 20 years old, getting promoted to captain. Now he's a battalion chief, and I work for my brother, and it's usually the little brother, looks up to the big brother as their hero, but it's the total opposite for me. My little brother's my hero. He's my mentor. He's everything to me. So it's cool.
No, that's like I said, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, you don't normally hear, it's usually the reverse. It's usually the older, the younger brother looks up to the older brother. But wow, already a battalion chief.
Yeah, he's a stud.
Damn, okay. Could you tell us a little bit about your department, that how many stations, amount of personnel?
Yeah, no problem. We have 3 stations currently. We're supposed to break ground at the end of this month on a 4th station. We run 2 engines and a tiller truck. I'm on the tiller. We have rescue ambulances out here as well. So we have 4 rescue ambulances that do have firefighters on them. So they do respond to fire calls. They got their turnouts and tools and everything on there as well. And I'm occasionally on the ambulance as well. I'm an EMT basic though, so I'm not really useful.
All right.
According to some of the medics. But yeah, we have a little over 65 people online. We're right in that range. We have a training captain position as well, who is a 40-hour assignment. And we run a regional academy from our department. The academy is based out of our department, but we have 9 participating agencies who send their personnel through the regional style academy there.
What's your minimum staffing?
Minimum staffing just went up. Actually, we went from 15 a day to 18 a day and put on another rescue ambulance and a 4th on the truck. So that was nice. Our call volume's about 12,000 calls a year out of 3 stations. So we're relatively busy for 3 houses. I know everybody's got different numbers, but busyness is relative. So we are busy. We're getting our ass kicked out there a lot, but it's fun. And like I said, we're at 18 a day. So the minimum's good. 18 a day gives us, we get 3 off on vacation a day allowed. So there is a good potential for overtime, and we do mandatory overtimes as well. So they're not hot and heavy, but they're there.
How many are assigned on the engine and the tiller?
We run 3-0 staffing on the engines and 4-0 on the tiller.
And four is four the minimum on the tiller?
Yep, we run 4 on the tiller minimum just based on our staffing model. We used to run 3, and then in the future, we're not sure. We may have to go back to 3 when we open this new house. They're trying to get more staffing, but we'll see how it goes.
And on a typical box alarm, are you dumping all three stations
Oh
if
yeah,
it's in your area?
typical box alarm dumps the whole city except one rescue. We'll leave 1 rescue ambulance in play for medical calls, and we also call in 2 mutual aid engines from our surrounding counties and a mutual aid ambulance. And that's a first alarm.
And you did say if you are assigned on the ambulance can still function as a firefighter, if they arrive on scene.
That's correct. And with our we frequently see our rescues getting assigned to search. Prior to having a truck staffed, that was like a really common occurrence to see a rescue ambulance get assigned search. 2-out function, they get assigned that a lot. They get attached to the first due engine company for suppression to put more guys on the line. We use them for exposure protection, stuff like that. So they're busy. They're busy companies for sure.
And is it safe to say engines do engine work, trucks do truck work, or?
It's safe to say engines do engine work for sure, but it would not be it's not uncommon for us to mix and match, right? We rarely would put the truck on a hose line, but we'll put the engine on a roof. It's just, we're so, you know, it's like any small department, we're tax saturated, manpower limited. So we go with what we know. For a long time, we didn't have a truck. We're 3 years into our truck program now. So for a long time, we didn't have a truck and we were, you know, whoever was whatever due where we needed ventilation or we needed search became a truck company working off an engine. So everyone has the skills. Truck companies are getting a little more aggressive now in our department as far as training goes. We're more specified training and solely focusing on truck tasks, but everybody can do everything. So,
okay. Is your truck truly a truck or does it have water on it?
It's got a 70 gallon CAF system on it. So if we roll up on a little vehicle fire, we can blast that thing, but it's a true truck. No water. We run a dry house, which has been a little point of contention lately because our truck is in our busy district, our busiest district, and we are statistically first due to the most fires in the city. So showing up dry has been something we're trying to figure out how we're going to do this, how we're going to staff this. So,
okay. I mean, hey, it's growing pains. You know, every department has to learn their curve. So I totally get it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've showed up on fires before where we were first due by a long shot because it was in our district. We were already rolling out of the barn on an EMS call and diverted to a structure fire. So we got there, jumped off and go bust a search out real quick and then come out with a primary all clear, but no water still. And you're kind of hanging out like, and people are like, dude, put some water. And we're like, we don't have any water. They're like, what? There's no water on this? I'm like, no, but there's a lot of cool tools.
Okay. All right. How'd you find your way to the truck? I mean, are you a truckie at heart or do you like engine work?
You know what? Pardon me. I'm confused. I don't know. I'm passionate about just structure fire work in general. The truck is based out of my favorite house to work at. So we do have a bid system and I bid that house because I just like the call volume out there. I like where it's at. It's actually on the training ground. So you have access to that at all times. You don't have to travel to go train. It's just, that's my house. I've been there the majority of my career. I spent a little bit of time downtown at the big station, but the majority of my career was spent out there and the truck's there. So that's what I'm on. If an engine was there, I would still bid that house just because I love that house. But as far as the work goes, I love them both. I'm really passionate about search. Our company H&H, we do a search class that's awesome in my opinion, right? But we really like it because we're passionate about search, a forcible entry. Like these are some of your bread and butter skills when you start that you kind of fall in love with, right? But then you turn to the engine and I'm in love with pulling hose. I'm in love with fire dynamics and fire suppression, the whole shooting match. I don't care if I'm on an engine or a truck. I know that's kind of weird to have that mentality, but I'm a fan of it all. But I bid the house, not the apparatus.
Okay. I mean, I personally don't think it's weird. I think if you like best of both worlds, it's actually great if you're passionate and good at both, because that way, if you ever get, hey, we need you to move over to the engine for the shift, I mean, you're all about it. So I personally don't see anything wrong with that at all.
Yeah. And everybody that has a truck knows that it's in the shop, like, you know, 6 months out of the year. So you're going to be on the engine anyway, because we can't afford two trucks. All right. It's not 6 months, but like 4 months, it's for sure. But I will say that there's no cooler position than riding in the tiller box when you're driving. That is the best position ever. You're up and elevated. You can see if it's a working fire before anybody else. You got a good lay of the land when you step off. You can see over fences from your platform when you're getting down. So you get a good look at everything when you show up on scene. I like it a lot for sure.
Okay. All right. Tilling and thrilling. Awesome. Awesome. How busy is your station? I mean, cause you said, you know, you're probably going to get your teeth kicked in. So what's a busy day for you guys?
Average call volume for all three stations is about 40 a day. That 40 is our number where we know we're getting worked, you know? So if it hits the 40 call a day, we're like, damn, dude, it's a busy day, right? You have your 20 call days, you know, they're there, no doubt. But 40 is our number where we say, yep, we're getting work today. And that's normally spread the majority between the two, my station that I'm at on the east side and then our station downtown. We have one station that's down south that's kind of the sleepy station. They're a little busier than they used to be, but it's pretty quiet down there for sure. And that we used to call it vacation station. But a lot of hard hitters down there, it just doesn't get as much work as the other two.
I mean, yeah, it's one of those things. Every department has a station like that. I mean, you know, the mind of a chief when geographically they start looking at where they need to place stations, you know, different factors come into that. But yeah, I mean, you're dealt the cards that you got, you know. I'm at a slow station. I wish we were busier, but in my career, I've been at busy stations where as I got older, I just wanted to do something different. I transferred out, but I totally get it. But 40 calls is a lot, dude. That's a lot.
And that's spread between all three stations, you know, 40 total for the department. But yeah, we're ripped.
All right. What does the term aggressive mean to you?
The term aggressive, it's funny that you asked that because I looked at that when you sent me the questions. We put a slide in our slideshow that says aggressive on the top and then has the Webster's definition. And then the next slide says reckless and it has the Webster's definition. And aggressive is pursuing one's aims. And goals aggressively, right? Like pursuing them relentlessly. So that's what aggressive is to me. And you think about that, and the way we say it in the class is I say, if I stepped off the truck and your family member was trapped inside your home in a fire, would you want me to pursue your aims and goals relentlessly? And that would be to save your family. And the answer is yes, every time. I think where we fall short in the fire service, and I think where the problem is, and I think why you asked this question is we often change the definition of reckless for the definition of aggressive. And I think that's where we fell into this pitfall several years ago where aggressive became this dirty word. And I think if you look up and you put them side by side, the definition of aggressive and the definition of reckless, I think people are using the definition of reckless to describe aggressiveness.
I like the way you put that. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Intelligently aggressive. That's what we should all be, intelligently aggressive.
Correct. Okay. Speaking of which, how did Horton and Hunt begin? Because like, so normally since I've been doing this, talking to individuals, there comes a point in someone's career where something happens and a breaker gets tripped and you're like, you know what? I'm going to start this. I'm going to do it. So, how did that come about?
I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version because this is a long story. We had always talked, right? My brother and my business partner, Brian Hunt, who is another one of my mentors, an amazing firefighter. He is one of the pillars of the Northern Nevada Fire Service. Him and my brother were academy instructors when I got into the fire service, and we were obviously all friends prior to that. And we had always talked, or well, I had always listened to them talk about having a training company one day and how cool that would be, and all these things they wanted to do with it. And this was really a topic of discussion that came up a lot with these two. And I listened, you know, I was a good, aggressive listener. And one day, pardon me, and here's the Reader's Digest version, which is this is crazy story, but we had a friend who worked for Blackwater, who worked for the fire service, then left and went to Blackwater. Blackwater dissolved, split up into a couple other companies. He started working for one of the subsidiary companies, and they do work for an aerospace company. We had to sign a big NDA, so I can't really go into a bunch of details, but they work for this big aerospace company doing some tasks when. They'd recover the capsule when it comes down from space after rocket launches out in the ocean. And so this company was approached by this large aerospace company, and they said, "Can you put together a group of hazard mitigators, basically, that can do all of these things?" And they had this big long checklist of like hazards that they're being countered. Said, "These are the most likely hazards to pop up." And it was all firefighter stuff, right? It was hazmat stuff, EMS stuff, fire suppression stuff. It was all firefighter stuff. So this company then contacted our buddy, Jeremy Hall, and Jeremy looked at this and said, "I know some guys that can do this." And at the time, we were all teaching academies together. We had a really ripping cadre, and Jeremy came to Micah, Brian, and I, and said, "Here's the deal. We got this thing here. These guys, this aerospace company is looking for this. Do you think you guys could do all these things?" We looked at the list, and it was stuff. If you're a firefighter, you would look at this list and laugh. You'd say, "Well, yeah, this stuff's easy. We do this shit every day." But to these guys who are trying to send rockets to space, like they don't know how to do any of that stuff. So it looked complicated to them. Long story short, things started moving real fast. And about 3 weeks later, Brian, my partner, was in Cape Canaveral, Florida, FaceTiming me from the arm that walks out to the space station with like Buzz Aldrin's autograph on the wall and all the astronauts that have ever walked out to a spaceship on the wall. It was the most insane, surreal thing ever. Like, you want to talk about feeling out of your depth? Like, it was, you ever seen the scene in Armageddon where they walk into the hangar and the real astronauts go, talk about the wrong stuff? That's exactly how we felt. And so my business partner Brian met with this aerospace company and worked with this other subsidiary company trying to get a bid together for what this would cost. And this was a, month or two long process. And long story short, in the end, we did not get the bid, clearly. So, but during the middle of this process, they said, do you guys have a company? Like, out of the blue, they're like, what's your LLC? Who are you? And Brian was like, well, we don't have a company. We're just some guys. They're like, well, you need a company. So he called me and he's like, we got to have a company. Like, we need a name and on all this stuff. So I said, no problem. I had designed the H&H logo years back for a crew that I was on that we called the Heavy Hitters. And it was all guys, that were pretty dialed in dudes, but we were also all 200 pounds plus. So we called ourselves the Heavy Hitters, jokingly. But I had already designed this logo. And thankfully, my last name's Horton, Micah's last name's Horton, and Brian's last name's Hunt. So we just used it as our company logo and designed Hortons and Hunt LLC. I jumped online and we filed all the paperwork for it. My dad actually did it all because he's the fourth partner. His last name's also Horton, obviously. And I jumped online, we made this company, and then we gave them this bid, and they said no thank you and kicked us out, and that was it. But now we had a LLC established, right? And we looked at each other and we said, legwork's already done, company exists, we're not going to space, but let's start training some people, so it's a joke, we always say that we were never going to space, but we might have been able to put some fires out there for them. But nah, never worked out, but it gave us the door open to do this, and then we ran with it, man. We've been full steam ahead since.
And so what does H&H specifically train on, or do you have an array of things?
So if you go to our website, you can see like our basic classes that we offer all the time, forcible entry, search, officer development. We do hose pull classes. We do all your basics. We're huge on the basics. Like, that's our guiding principle, is being a black belt in the basics. We harp that over and over. So those are our basic classes, but we'll design kind of anything that you want if we feel comfortable training in that arena, right? If you come to us and you say, pardon me, I don't know why I got a tickle in my throat, but
You're fine.
you come to us and say, hey, we want to train on, rappelling off the Empire State Building upside down to rescue people. I'm not going to take on that training. That's not our bailiwick. So, but if you want to train on the basics of firefighting, then we're your guys. We'll come out there, and so is everybody else. There's a ton of great training companies out there, which opening this training company and starting this has made me realize these guys all reach out to each other and we all talk to each other, and for the most part, and everybody is super helpful and just wants everybody to be successful. It's been a bitchin' experience, but we're huge on the basics, the building blocks of firefighting. So
And I know, talking to in the past, I talked to Chief Bob Reiser. He also mentioned how the area that you guys are in, the Nevada area, is kind of lacking when it comes to training cadres, training companies. So I'm sure that helps for sure.
it was a giant motivation, and shout out to Bob. He's amazing. He's a stud, lead by example chief that has not only taken care of his guys by getting them the training, but supported us as a local training company and brought us in to do some trainings for them, which has been a great, great help. Yeah, there's nothing in this area. There's not a lot in the Nevada area, period. Even if you go down south, it's hard to get a training class, and it's such a large state. A lot of people don't realize, you say you're from Nevada, they're like, oh, you're from Vegas. And I'm like, no, I live 8 hours away from Vegas. I live multiple in on the East Coast. I live multiple states away from Vegas. So the area is very dry as far as that goes. And then you can go over the hill and you can find some training we call going over the hill, like to Sacramento Bay Area, that type of stuff. You can find training classes here and there. It's just not consistent. And then, as you know, you can't always go. You can't always load
Right.
up and go train. And I've been fortunate enough to have the freedom to fly all over the country and go to different trainings and conferences and whatnot, but not everybody has that. So to put it in your backyard and work with all the local partnerships that we have as far as getting training sites together and putting trainings together and gathering the gear, you know, and we're still a fledgling company, you know. We have like we can't even afford turnouts. Sometimes, you know, guys look at pictures of us turn or training and they're like, dude, these guys aren't turned out in their class, you know, is. Well, we can't afford turnouts, and our department has explicitly told us you will not use your issued gear for your private company training, which is fine, you know, but we're small, you know, we're a small company. And so this area was just starving for it and wanted it, it seemed like. And so far, that's been the case, man. We've been well received, and the area has been happy that we're here, and we're trying to do it. So.
Okay. I mean, I totally get it. I mean, hell, everything's expensive. The cost of turnout gear, I hate to know how much it is nowadays, but I totally get it. But I like the fact too that you guys are you're trying to bring in training in an area that, like you said, there's not a lot out there that you can get. So you're trying to build those building blocks for that area. And it's easy for anybody to be like, oh, well, these guys aren't the real deal. They don't have turnout gear. You know what I'm saying? But like you're actually putting forth the effort to do something.
We are. And, you know, we've received very little negative feedback from anybody. Even the online trolls have been pretty kind to us. That was one of the things that popped up. Like, why aren't these guys turning? And it wasn't super negative. It was just a question, but we addressed it. We're like, we don't have enough money, man. I can't afford turnouts, you know, and I can't use my department issued ones. If you want to sponsor us and throw us some turnouts and air packs, dude, I'll bang it out all day with you, man. But we just, at this point, that's not an option for us. One of the things that we're also doing in this area is we put on a Tactics on Tap. And this is something that
Okay.
happens all over the country. There's different chapters. We actually got a hold of the guys, the original guys, and said, hey, we'd like to use the name. Is this something that we can do? And they were like, yeah, a bunch of people do it, you know, and you just start a chapter, just don't make money off it. And if it goes well, you know, you need a social media page. And I was like, well, we already have one of those, you know. So we went forward and we've been bringing in speakers once a month. We've now switched to every other month, but we bring a speaker in at a local pizza joint that has a big open room we can use and then has a bar attached to the back because it's firefighters. You got to have a bar. And we bring them in and it's free of charge. They give, you know, about an hour and a half, you know, lecture on whatever they're passionate about. We get local sponsors to pay for all the beer, all the pizza for everybody that comes down. We get local sponsors to donate all the raffle prizes that we have. We sell raffle tickets, and all the proceeds from the raffle tickets go towards, they used to go towards paying for hotel rooms for the speakers, but now we even have a sponsor for that that
Okay.
pays for the hotel room. But now all the money that we make on the raffle tickets goes to tip the bartenders and tip the pizza staff for working their butts off all night. So it's a zero profit for anybody. Nobody's making money. The speakers aren't getting paid. It's just all out of passion. It's 100% free for everybody that attends because even though we have a training company that's offering training in the area, we still got to charge for it. I got to pay cadre members. I got to rent sandy huts. I got to pay for things for the training company. So we can't train for free, but we want to bring something to the guys who even, you know, can't get a 8-hour day off to come do a search class or can't afford, you know, whatever the enrollment fee is for whatever class we're putting on. We got something that's for free. We've taken every excuse because firemen are also great at making excuses,
Oh, yeah.
right? So we've taken every excuse away for people. It's on a Wednesday. It's only 2 hours long. It's free. It's local. Come on down. And we've seen tremendous support from the fire community up here in our area. You know, we've got an average of 13 different departments represented every time we put it on, whether that's one guy or 10 guys, you know, but they're there. We've had all the way up to 120 people in the room when Brian Olson came up and spoke. You know, the average is about 50. But yeah, we get that room packed. It's cool.
Awesome. I like it. Okay. All right. A topic of recruitment and retention. What do you see the fire service is doing well? What do you see the fire service can improve on?
Well, I think we can start telling the truth. One of the things that we have always said in the fire service, since I've been in the fire service, and I'm sure since you have and everybody else listening, you won the lottery. You got the golden ticket. It's the best job in the world, right? That's true for me, for you. This might not be true for every individual. So what we should do is we should say, this can be the best job in the world. This can be your lottery ticket. This can be the golden ticket for you. These are the realities of what this job entails. And I'm not trying to be negative about the job, because for me, this is the greatest job in the world. But we don't talk about how hard this is on family life. We don't talk about how hard this is on personal life. We don't talk about the things you're going to see, the things you're going to smell, the places you're going to go. We don't talk about that stuff. We just talk about bitching ass structure fires and how cool this is going to be and saving babies and hanging with ladies and all this cool stuff. We don't ever really tell the whole story. It's not in the brochure, right?
Right.
The backside of the brochure doesn't say, oh, and by the way, you know, all these things associated with it too. I think if we told the truth a little bit more, we would, that would help retention, not really recruitment, but retention, because the individuals that said, okay, I read the whole brochure and I'm cool, I'm going to do this. So they'd stick around, because a lot of guys get here and they're like, I got sold a bill of goods that isn't true.
Yeah.
Like, I thought you guys were going to fires every day, and I keep going to these EMS calls and I didn't want to do this, you know? So I think telling the truth would be good for retention. I really do. And the departments that are getting their teeth knocked in, you need to tell people that. Like, you need to, they should do their research and know, but you don't know if you've never, if you look at the call sheet and you're like, well, this department runs 6,000 calls a year and this department runs 12,000 calls a year. Like, I don't really know what that means. Those are just numbers, right? This department has X stations. This department has X stations. Like, you need to tell them, hey, we have three stations. We run 12,000 calls a year, dude. You're not sleeping at night. Just so you know, like, well, that's not what we do here. I think that would help with retention a lot, because people get sold a bill of goods. It's just not very accurate. No. I think with recruitment, if we went out there and did recruitment on the cool stuff that we do, like when you go to a career day, right, at a high school or a job fair or whatever the case may be, you go there and what do the Marines have? Every time you see the Marines, they got a pull-up.
Right.
And they get people over there and they got them doing pull-ups, and then they're busting out pull-ups and they're engaging with these people in one little aspect of like what they do. And then when you see the fire department, you come over and they're in a bad shirt, and they're, which I, you know, that's a whole nother topic, right? They're in a bad shirt. They look like a cop, and they're sitting there, and they have, I've been to them where they have a bowl of candy and a brochure.
Right. Yes.
They're like, no, the fire department's great. You know, come on down, check us out, you know? And what they don't have is a forcible entry door, right? An air pack you can put on and maybe bust out a pull up with, you know, a cool video showing some training and some actual things we do. And then the real brochure to give them, like I just talked about. Here's some of the cool stuff we do. Here's some of the sexy stuff we do. Grab this Halligan, force this door, get after it. You know, let's see what you got. Does this seem like something cool for you? If you were a high school senior and the fire department came in and their drops with some irons and started banging doors with you, like, you're probably going to be a firefighter. You know what I mean?
Right.
They come in with a bowl of candy and a balloon and a brochure and a bad shirt. You're going to be like, meh, I'm going to go see if I can make, you know, some internet money.
Here's a plastic helmet.
Yes. I think we can do a better job of that kind of stuff. You know, I think we can just do a better job of showing who we are and what we do, the physicality of it, going back to like explorer programs. I think is huge. We've got away from that in this area. Reno Fire Department, which is the big boys on the block out here, just started their Explorer program again and had a huge turnout for it. So I think that's a great way to get people's feet wet, get them in there, let them see what's going on. So those are some ideas, I think. I don't know how realistic those can be, but I think there's some ideas.
I personally like it. I mean, I've never thought of it that way, but on the flip side too, I can see if you presented that, depending on wherever the event is, or if your HR department has a bunch of pull, I can see them going, well, you know, just the banging, that's going to be loud. But like, we don't, you're right. Like, we don't tell people truly what we do. Like, I genuinely believe if the general public knew the amount of stuff that goes on behind the scenes, they would start questioning things like, seriously, this is what's going on, or this is what you guys don't or do. Like, it's just it's shocking.
I think it lends to the discussion of what we are required to know. And then I don't want to get into like compensation and, all that kind of stuff. But if you imagined everything we do as a hat you have to wear, right? I got my firefighter hat on because I'm a trained structural firefighter. Well, I'm also a trained wildland firefighter, and I'm also a EMT or a paramedic, but I'm also a hazmat technician, and by the time you're done, you've got this hat on that's 10 feet tall that's breaking your neck, and you never know which one of those hats you're going to have to wear for the day. When I go to, my job at the bank, I always use that as my example. I've never worked at a bank, but I imagine it's probably not as hard as being a firefighter. No offense, bankers. It's probably not that gnarly. Like, you probably don't have like dire consequences with everything that you have to know, right? If I go from a hazmat call where we could all die if we walk in on the wrong chemical to a structure fire where everybody could die, right? Same thing. Now I got an EMS call. I have to like flip through all these pages in a moment's notice to solve this critical issue. And I don't think the public understands the stress that brings or the amount of dedication it takes to be a master of all of those crafts. We always say be a master of your craft, but we truly have so many crafts that we're asking guys, I think unfairly, to be this jack of all trades and master of none. And I don't really know if I like that. I don't know if I like spreading our knowledge out so far. Like, does it get thinner the farther it goes out? Because it's really hard to keep a vast knowledge of all of these incredibly, incredibly strenuous topics. So I think, EMS and fire, that's great that we provide those services. And I do think that it should be under the same roof and under the same banner, because when you have private EMS, I would venture to say that the pride of the organization and the pride of the city that they're serving may not be as high. So I do want them under the same roof. I just think that they should be different divisions. And we just say, these guys do EMS, these guys do fire. You know what I mean? That way we can start to separate. Because if I asked anybody on earth, I said, if you said 1 out of 10, how important is firefighting for your community safety? They'd say 10, everyone. How important is EMS for your community safety? 10. Everyone would say that. So now I'm going to ask the same individual, same person, you go provide both of those services that you said were a 10. You have to do both really good all the time. And you got to do hazmat. And you got to do tech rescue. And we have a river here, so you better be good at swift water. Oh, we live in Nevada, so you got to do bushfire in the summer too. Don't forget about that. All super, super dangerous, kill people all the time. So do all that. I think that's kind of wild that we ask that of people.
No, you're right. You're 100% right. And I feel like because we ask individuals to do all that you can't tell me that certain I'm gonna say you can't say that certain topics within that umbrella go unlaxed. Like somewhere someone's gonna lack in training on a fireside because they run more EMS. So they're going to be a whiz at EMS, but when it comes to fire, they're like, eh. Or they run a lot of fire, but hey, we're going to attach y'all to do hazmat. When you get a hazmat call, they're like, eh. I 100% agree. I think we need to, it's great if you can provide that to your community, but if I was a fire chief, I'd have to be realistic and know, okay, my guys can't do it all, especially if you're a smaller organization. If you're large, like Houston, FDNY, where you can go, okay, hey, yes, you're going to be good at fire. You need to be good at fire, but we're also going to see who wants to do hazmat and just try to balance it where you can use that manpower because there are going to be people out of like the whole, let's say if your station or if your department's like FDNY size, oh yeah, I love hazmat. Oh yeah, I can get like 10 guys that are all jam up on hazmat, but we like fire stuff too. I totally 100% agree with you. And I think it's affecting smaller departments. It's killing these guys. and
It's
girls.
money. It's money, you know, and that's the solve every problem in the world. Give me some time and some money, right? And you see a lot of these larger departments do run it that way. They have divisions for things and they split things up, especially EMS and fire, right? The two major components of this. And you see the smaller departments, they don't have the money to do that, right? Because if I'm going to split up EMS, I'm going to have to hire a bunch of more guys. I'm going to have to get more rigs. I'm going to have to change our response model. So it's a money issue. But it's really, like you said, it comes down to sometimes even departments prioritize things. They look at the numbers and say, hey, we run 90% EMS calls here. You know, that's a reality. And they start to shift that training priority towards that, where we forget about this other side sometimes. And when we forget about this other side sometimes, and we show up and we go, well, our guys aren't very good at this. Well, no shit. We never train on it. So, and they're always doing that other thing because we're so busy and so small. So
Absolutely. Absolutely.
that's
And
the thought.
I think too, it comes down to, and like I said, just my opinion only, I truly think it also comes down to pride. Like, to me, it's okay. Like, at least for me, like, I know my wheelhouse. I don't care for anything tech rescue. I'm just gonna be 100% honest. Like, I could give two shits less about it. I primarily focus on fire and EMS because that's the majority of what I do. But I truly believe chief officers or administration officers for their department don't like calling in help when it's like, well, my guys can do this too. In a way, like, why not use the resources around you? Like, you know, we say, hey, you know, we can always cancel mutual aid and whatnot. You can always cancel these companies that are coming in if it's not exactly what that is. But like, I think chief officers are losing sight of that. It's hey, to the board or whoever they report to, this is what my department does on a yearly basis. This is how much money we're saving, blah, 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 blah. But it's not really helping because I'm telling you, people are like pencil whipping shit. You know, when Target Solutions, oh, I need to do my Con Ed on hazmat. These guys aren't really doing, like, nobody fucking cares about that.
Well, it also brings up another funny topic that I talk about a lot. I actually had a long discussion with Dennis Riley, Chief Riley, about it on our podcast. But we have all of these things we do, all these hats, like I was saying, that we wear, right? And with all of them, barring one, we have measurable standards, right? For EMS, we have protocols. For hazmat, obviously, we have protocols for that. We have these measurable standards that we act by and that we enforce and that we hold you accountable to as well. You know, if you go out on an EMS call, I don't know your level of certification, but if a paramedic goes out on an EMS call and they give somebody too much fentanyl and they die because they violated a protocol, you bet your ass there is a consequence for that and an accountability to be held for that. The one place we do not have measurable standards in most cases, I'm sure there's departments out there that do, but in most cases, we do not have measurable standards for fire ground performance or
Absolutely.
fire ground task performance. And it's a sticky wicket when you start talking about it because I want measurable standards for that. If we go to a structure fire and let's say we have confirmed victims. We pull up and they're yelling in the front yard, hey, my kid's in there, my kid's in there. You know, you got to get in there. And we get up to the porch and we have about a minute and 45 second mask up time. And then we get our irons out that we forgot. You got to bang them to separate them. And we're doing the thing where we pull on them and it takes about 30 seconds to get those unmarried.
Right.
And then we start doing the force and we're going against the spike and we kind of didn't do our gap right and our bevel's to our jam when it should be to our door. Whatever the case may be, right? And we struggle through our forcible entry and it takes us 3 minutes to get through the door, right? And then we get in there and we're doing a wall search and the human centipede hanging onto each other's boots, right? And it takes 5 minutes to find this kid. Well, we know that air brake to dead people's 8 minutes on average, right? Why? We don't know what the status of that person was in that house, but I can tell you for sure that we did not give them a very good chance by being garbage at our skills. But we don't come out of the fire and go, you didn't do that right. Your mask up time was a minute and 45 seconds. Your forcible entry time was 3 minutes and 45 seconds. You did a shitty search on the interior. You know, you did not give this person every chance that they could have had to live. And therefore, you are going to be held accountable. Not for a life, right? Because we can't do that, but you are going to be held accountable for not being proficient at your skills. And here are the repercussions for that. What we do is we come outside and we sit on the tailboard and we tell lies to each other, to the individuals. And we say, oh my God, you know, that was a crazy fire, man, dude. You never know what's going to happen in there, bro. Like, it was so hot and like, oh man, bro, I can't believe it. Oh, it sucks. That kid was probably dead before we even got in there. It's so smoky. You know, you never know. Right. And we tell all these bullshit lies and nobody ever goes, bro, I watched you mask up. You look like an idiot. You have no idea what you're doing. I watched you force that door. Your tactics were totally, totally incorrect. I watched you go into the building, crawling on your hands and knees, grabbing the guy in front of his boot. And you guys did a right-handed search and touched the wall the entire time. Okay. I watched you do all this stuff, or I looked at your GoPro video and it told the tale on you. You know, we never do that. Nope. We just come outside and tell a bunch of lies to ourselves, to each other, and to the citizens.
Yep.
And I think it's unfair. Yep. Now, I said it's a sticky wicket because when we get into it and we say, well, how do we create these measurable standards? And I like that in our academy, we have our JPRs, you know, job performance standards, JPSs, and you can go through these and they have measurable. Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? And did you do it in this time frame? And then we hold the recruits accountable to this. I don't like the checkbox aspect of it, right? But I do like that we establish a standard of performance held accountable to by a time frame of performance. And then we hold these probies accountable to it to get out of the academy. And then once we hit the line, like,
they're done. That's done. It.
I don't know if they fall into the cushions of the recliner or if we just say, like, you're better than that. You don't ever have to train on this again. But we've all been to a fire and watched a salty, seasoned guy not do well. I've been to a fire and did not do well. Right? That it's whatever XYZ skill and should have been held accountable for it. Should have been pulled aside and said, you did not perform X task correctly and I should have been written up for it. And then I would have held myself accountable, gone and trained on it, got better, and then upheld the standard. But we don't have measurable standards in the fire service for fire performance. And it's funny because you're the so-and-so fire department, but that's the one thing we don't hold people accountable for.
You're right. I mean, I think to myself, what's the end result? What do we do for that? Should we start writing individuals up and then making them go through remedial training? But I can tell you that from my experience, I can hear right now, well, we'll just go to the officer. It's the officer's problem. And rightfully so. If you're the captain of the ship, you got to make sure that your guys are held to a standard. 100% true on that. But like you said, it seems like we do that to the probies. And once they get out, it's like, all right, well, we're going to hope that whoever we put you with, sometimes knowingly, they know we're going to put you with a shitty crew. So we're hoping that you can turn that crew around where I truly believe if we want to keep that standard, we need to stop promoting off of, oh, well, you scored well on a test. We need to start looking at individuals' characters, how they are, how they watched it. Look at their yearly performance. Another thing I wish that some departments would do is go talk to their peers. That's the best measurement of an individual you can get to. Hey, we're thinking about promoting Jesse. What do you think? Oh, solid. Stand up. I mean, he's always eager to learn, blah, 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 blah. But nope, it's, all right, can you score high on a test? All right, check. All right, let's do your little officer scenario. Check, 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 check box. All right, cool. You're a captain now, and have fun. But that's it. That's what we do.
I agree 100% as far as like the promotion thing goes. There's got to be some test, right? We got to put them through some paces and see how they do on a scenario, I suppose. And if that makes you feel better as a chief, I think that that's great. But we have a department around here that they go and interview every, they're small, but they interview every single member when there's a captain's list. And they say, which one of these guys do you want to work for? And which one of these guys do you not want to work for? And why?
That's fucking awesome.
It is. It's rad. They keep it all anonymous, but then they give that feedback back to the captains or the candidates, mm-hmm. which is great. So they can either change or die, you know, as far as the scenarios and running the test all goes, how about teach me something? How about go through all of this and then say, go teach me something. like I'm a probie. Go walk me through forcible entry. Go walk me through a hose pull. Go do all this. And people get like, they're like, well, that's not the captain's job. Bullshit. You don't know how to do something, then how the hell as a individual can I follow you? How can I listen to you tell me to do something that you don't even know how to do? So I've always thought that was weird that there's no like test for in leadership. There's no test for being able to lead people and show them how to do the job or mentor them. There's no test for that, which I thought was weird. But as far as the fireground performance stuff goes and the measurable standards, this is turning around. We have to turn around an aircraft carrier, not a jet ski. So this is going to take time. So as a department, you establish your whatever your 5 or 7 fireground skills that you deem appropriately for your basics, for your package, you know, your measurable standards package. And then you give them to the department. You put a committee together, you get them to where your department thinks they're right. And then you disseminate them and you say, here's the standards of our department for fireground performance. Here's how you're going to do it. Here's the time objectives for it. Officers, here you go. You have 6 months to bring your companies up to speed. Okay. And at the 6 month mark, go train, go get these down, knock them out of the park, be good at them. On the 6 month mark, we're going to test everybody from battalion chiefs all the way down to probies. Everybody's going to get a Halligan in their hand. Everybody's going to take a hydrant. Everybody's going to pull a line. Everybody's going to run saw, whatever you deem necessary for your department. And then you run them through the paces and you check them off. I hate to say that word, but you certify them. You say, you are standard performing at this. You've got it. And then when they go on the fire ground and they don't got it, then you start the progressive discipline. You counsel them. You talk to them. You put a performance improvement plan in place. You go retrain them. You document the retraining. You go retest them. You recertify them on said skill and you start again. And the next time they fuck it up on a fire, you go to step 2 on progressive discipline. And then you get another performance improvement plan in place and you retrain them and you document the training and you recertify them and it just starts all over. And then the third time they do it, you fucking fire them. And I hate that. That sounds punitive. And I don't want to get all my union boys fired up on this podcast.
Right, right.
But I'm telling you right now, you can do the job or you can't. And we've put a foolproof plan in place with progressive discipline and performance improvement measures and trainings. And we've put all the pieces of the puzzle together to make sure that every member hits on all cylinders at all times. But people don't do it because it's hard. Leadership is simple, not easy. And everybody talks about how, you know, they want to be a leader and they want to do what's right and they want to lead the fire service forward. And then when it comes to doing the actual leadership and doing the hard stuff, everybody gets real squeamish. And I'm not saying we should be out there on a punitive mission. We should be out there on a mission to do all the things we said we were going to do when we took our oath. That's the mission we should be on. And sometimes it's going to get punitive and sometimes it's going to hurt and sometimes people are going to get fired. It's reality.
Fucking facts. I mean, we're going to call our, I don't care if you're volunteer, part-time, combination, full, whatever. We call ourselves professionals. I look at it as professional organizations. I mean, hell, HBO's Hard Knocks. If you get a knock on that door, hey, bring your playbook. Come downstairs. You're fucking done. Yep. Simple, simple. The Army, the Navy, I've never been in the armed forces, but I'm pretty sure if you don't meet the Army or Navy's objectives, they'll probably do a little remedial. Hey, let's see. Maybe he learned, he or she learns differently. Let's take our time. We're going to try this. We're going to try that. At some point, they should just go, or they're going to go, hey, unfortunately, your services are no longer needed. But we don't do that with the fire department, at least most.
No, we don't do it on a lot of occasions. And it's the 3 U's, right? They're either unknown, unable, or unwilling. Okay, number one, do you not know how to do this? Cool. Okay, let me show you. That's my job. I need to mentor you. I need to teach you. I need to document all of this too. That's a big, big loophole is why we have 30-year turds is because people are lazy and don't want to document stuff. Okay, you don't know? I'm going to teach you. I'm going to show you. Oh, you're unable? You just don't got the skill. You're not strong enough. You're not smart enough. You don't, you're just unable to do, you can't retain information. That's a huge problem, right? You can't do, you're unable to do the task. Okay. We got a problem. You're unwilling. This is the easiest one. You have all the skills and the knowledge. You're just a piece of shit. There's a system for this. There's a process to do this, and we need to weed these people out, but it's hard, right? And it's hard from all angles. It's tough to go to HR, I'm sure, for chiefs and say, hey, we're going to fire this person because it costs money to recruit people. It costs money to train people. It costs money to, for all of this stuff. This comes down to a dollar amount, and that's their job, is to manage the dollar amounts, right? It's hard for battalion chiefs, right? Because if their captains aren't doing the documentation, they don't know. They're running around from battalion to battalion. They very rarely have their finger on each individual's pulse. And then for the captains, I get it. It's probably hard to do documentation all the time and have a file that says, hey, this is where this person did good. This is where this person did bad. This is where they need to improve. Here's the trainings that we've done with them. Like, I'm sure that that gets tedious at times. But then we sit around and we go, this guy's a piece of shit. And then we just continue to say that for 30 years, but we don't do anything about it. So,
and I think if you're going to hold that hat, if you're going to step up to that plate, if you're going to talk that talk of, oh, you know, I'm going to be captain, I'm going to be lieutenant, I want to change things. When and if you do get it, put up or shut up. We have too many people here. All they want are the fucking bugles. They want the status. They want the recognition. Oh, I'm a captain of such and such truck engine, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes down to disciplining or having tough conversations, put your big boy pants on, girl, men or women, regardless, put your pants on, sit the person down as an adult and go, this is where you're lacking. But like you said, we don't do that. We have chiefs that won't do that. And it's like, you can't claim the title if you don't want the responsibility. If that's the case, don't claim the fucking title. Like, just stay away from it. It's just ridiculous.
There are people out there that are intelligent enough to know that they're like, I don't want to promote. I just don't want that responsibility. It's a lot of work. Good for you. I'm glad that you didn't take the test, right? We have ambulances, you know, which are everybody's favorite thing. They really love that. So we have guys who in the area, you know, and I'm not calling out anybody specific, but there's guys who promote solely to get off of an ambulance with absolutely no care or concern for what the responsibilities that come along that are. They just don't want to get up in the middle of the night to do a transfer. You know, that, so they're promoting for the wrong reasons wholeheartedly. And like I said, leadership, and this is, you know, something my brother says all the time, leadership is simple, not easy. Like, these concepts are really simple to understand. It's just not easy to perform. This is hard for sure. And we had this conversation with Tom Hollick a couple weeks ago, and we talked about expectations and accountability. We give expectations. We pound that word so hard in the fire service. It's crazy. Like, these are my expectations. Give clear expectations. You got to have expectations. You got to do. I agree. But if you have no accountability, you're just blowing hot air out of your mouth and you're just giving these guys just words because you're supposed to give expectations. And they're smart enough to know if you don't hold them accountable once, you're probably not going to do it on the second time. Yep. You're probably never going to do it.
Yep.
So, and they're humans. They'll push the boundary. You know, they're humans. It doesn't mean they're bad humans. They're just humans. So when you get so far off course, the ship gets so far off course from no accountability, bringing it back in line to get back on course is huge and takes these huge steps. And it seems crazy. It seems like you're turning the organization on its ear when you decide to hold people accountable again and get back in line. But if you just started with it, it would be minor corrections. When you're sailing your course, it'd be minor corrections here and there. You would create this culture of accountability, which then would allow people to operate in a way where they knew they needed to fulfill the expectations of the department because there were accountable consequences if you didn't. And I think you'd have to manage a lot less and you could lead a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much more we can go. I mean, we can continue to go on it, but it's, like, and I personally want to say, I'm not trying to be negative, but what it just infuriates me where, like, you can see, and that's the thing, like, individuals who are doing this, other people are watching, firefighters are watching you, even the new people can see it. Like, it's one of those things, you can't pick and choose when and where you want to discipline whatever the topic is. If it's written in black and white, that's it. It's black and white. You know what I'm saying? Especially when it comes to policies. Like, it's written on there. There is no in between gray area. Now, where I believe that there is a gray area is on the fire ground, because you can't black and white a fire ground scenario. It's too many variables. So you got to give leeway there. But when it comes to things as training, performance, physical fitness, it's got to be black and white, regardless. I'm sorry. That's just point blank.
I agree. As situationally on a fire ground, there's a ton of gray area because it's different and it's an ever-evolving battlefield, right? Tasks are black and white. Did you do this task correctly? Did you stretch that line correctly? And there's a different way to do it for every scenario that are, every presented front yard you go to or building you go into, there's a way to do it. Did you do it correctly? Right. What happens when the water comes out and fire dynamics, fuel loading, all these variables that go into structure fire fighting certainly make it gray, but there are tasks that are not gray. So.
What kind of schedule do you guys run?
4896.
48,
So
96.
bomb.
Is that all you've done?
That's all I've done, but
Okay.
it's the best, man. The best quote for 4896, one of my old captains used to say, two will get you 10. So if you got something coming up, you're going on a vacation or whatever, you just need 2 days off. You could take your annual, you could do a trade, whatever. You get 2 days off, that's 10 days. 10 days off, two will get you 10.
Who gets 10? Okay. All right. Let's talk about communication amongst the whole thing, rank and file. It's, I mean, I want to say it's my opinion, but I truly believe it's factual that most successful departments, all these departments that are thriving in culture and focused, mission driven communication, top down, down up, across the board. Like, how important is that?
I mean, obviously, communication is the key to everything. Our wives are all mad at us because we don't have good communication, right?
Right.
I know they're not listening right now. They don't either, but we won't tell them that. Communication is the key to everything, right? And every green sheet we've ever read, everything comes down to comms. Maybe not everything, but a lot, a chunk of it is communications. I think the biggest part for departments to be successful in their day-to-day operations and communications, and I'm talking from the chief to the probie, is telling the truth. Tell them the truth. Well, the truth shall set you free. A lot of the times with communications, we have this inherent desire to please people. So you'll tell person A the story, but you'll kind of form it to make sure you don't hurt their feelings or upset them. And then you'll tell person B the same story. And you're not necessarily lying, but you're maybe tweaking some facts so you don't tweak some noses along the way. And then when it gets harder than that, like we just talked about discipline or factual performance standards, right? We never tell the truth. We never tell the truth. I think as far as it goes up top, and I've never been a chief, I don't know what it's like being in there. I don't know what the responsibilities are. But if your people can't trust you, if they can't implicitly trust everything you do, if you've been caught in a lie or you've said something that turned out not to go the way you said it was going to go, or if you don't say anything, because I see that tactic around from people where the saying nothing leaves them beholden to nothing, that's also not telling the truth, right? So then when things pop up, you're like, did this person know this was going to happen? Did this person know this was the plan? What is going on around here? And then this trust degrades from truthfulness, right? And it goes all the way down. If you're in the house, firefighter to firefighter, right? We should tell the truth to each other. Like, you should be like, okay, dude, you didn't clean the bathrooms. I've had to clean the bathrooms five sets in a row. You know, that's your responsibility or whatever it is. And then have it out for a second. Be like, oh, I was busy doing this or I was doing that. And be like, okay, well, that's valid or that's not valid and work through it. But truth is huge on communication. Tell the truth.
Said truth shall set you free. I mean, it's like, yeah, I kind of equate it to, like, you get to work and you notice the rig is dirty and you're like, huh, that's weird. Oh, it rained yesterday. No, it didn't rain, but it's like, what were y'all doing? Oh man, we were slammed, we were busy. They're like, oh, okay. And then you go through whatever app you use. Yeah, I ran two calls. Yeah, man, but we have all kinds of stuff. Like, it's just excuses. Just, like, if you're not going to do it, just say, hey, I don't want to do it.
Look at me and say, I didn't watch the rig.
yeah.
My bad, bro. I didn't watch the rig. I'll get you next time. I fucked up. Sorry. And then you go, all right, I fuck up too. We're humans. And we move on.
Right. Let me see. We already hit that. We'll finish off with wellness, like truly being there for one another, physical fitness portion of the fire service. It's another topic where you might ruffle some feathers and you can't expect this person to do this, blah 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 blah.
Firefighter wellness and fitness, right? Where mental health and physical health is one of the biggest topics in the fire service right now, as it should be. I think it's incredibly important. On the physical fitness side of it, I have been, this year's been pretty eye-opening on that. And for me personally, because of doing our podcast, right? I had Marcos Orozco on our podcast. And if you follow this dude, you know he is a savage. This guy's out running marathons and turnouts and shit. He's a crazy person. I love you, buddy. But his firefighter fitness, pardon me. His firefighter fitness is different than my firefighter fitness. If I did his workouts the way he does, I would blow chunks and probably pass I would need resuscitation for sure. My fighter fitness is jujitsu. And I took Marcos to jujitsu and took him to the deep end of the pool. And he'll be the first to tell you that, right? Because that's my arena, right? I go to his arena, I die. Nobody can keep up with that, right? But he is the one who taught me and told me that everybody's fitness is different. It doesn't matter if you can't do 100 burpees in your turnouts, as long as you can do something else that is complementing your fitness on the fire ground. People get into this debate where they're like, oh yeah, you shouldn't run a lot, because then you're not strong. And then you're like, you should lift weights so you can be strong. But if you lift weights too much, then now you don't have endurance. You need to find whatever combination works for you. If you're doing nothing, if you're not working out and there's different types, right? We got skinny people that don't work out that are not healthy and not physically fit. And we got fat people that don't work out that are not physically fit. And we got people in the middle. They're just soft bodies that don't work out and aren't physically fit. You got to do something. I don't care what you do. If you want to go to jujitsu like I do, you want to go to the gym, you want to go to CrossFit, you want to be home gym, you want to do gear workouts while you're at work. It's all good. It's all good. Do something. You want to hire a trainer to run you through the paces. I'm wearing my Academy Fitness Prep shirt today from Jen Rohn's company. She's got a company specifically designed for getting people prepared for the fire service through physical fitness. She will get you ready to go. She'll also train you if you're in the fire service and get you doing workouts that will be specific for your job. Firefighter fitness is different for everybody, but it's super important to do it. I don't. You can't be stressed enough. You cannot just be a soft body laying around and do this job. We're all getting older too, right? Every day that goes by, you get older. Everything gets harder as you get older. It's important. I see these young guys that get hired and we're out there working, and I'm 42 years old this year. And there's guys I'll work into the dirt, they're in their 20s. And it's just because I've been consistently doing something for 25 years, When I was 15 years old, 15, 16, 17 years old, that's when I started my gym journey. Started going to the gym, lifting weights, doing cardio, doing that thing. I found jiu-jitsu 11 years ago. I added that and incorporated that into my fitness. And I do that at least 3 times a week, where I'm in doing jiu-jitsu for 2 hours and working that into as well. So it's led me to a point where now I'm 42 years old and I'm able to do the physical things of this job with no problem. One of the things my buddy Carlos Madrid said, everything in the fire service is heavy and awkward. So you better have strength to pick it up, stamina to carry it somewhere, and the endurance to do it over and over and over again. So if you can check those boxes, right? Back to the thing, I hate being check box firefighter. If you can check those boxes, man, you'll be all right. Just find what works for you and do it. Don't become a lazy ass. Don't make excuses. Just make it part of your life now and forever. As far as the mental health aspect of it goes, I find myself, the older I get, the more I care about this. And everybody's is different on that, right? Too. One of the things, one of the quotes from my brother that I love, it's okay to be okay. This job is, I do think that we do a overselling of the mental stress of this job at times. And I don't want to upset anybody or say that it can't be that way, but we tell people, hey, what's up? Welcome to the fire service. You won the lottery, it's golden ticket, best job in the world. Here's your turnouts, here's your training, you're ready to go. All right. Oh, and you're probably going to have a lot of mental issues from this job. Like everybody does, you know? So it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it's going to fuck you up. And that's not true. Some people don't. Some people work a 30-year career and walk away and they're just like, cool, I'm retired now. It's all good. Some people don't. You don't know, but you have to be prepared for that. And I think the trainings that we're putting out now and the resources available to us now help us understand what could happen. And then you know the warning signs if you're leading up to that. That's something that I like to tell people, you know, all of this stuff, because there's guys out there that are naysayers of the mental health stuff, right? Like, oh, this is sissy shit, this is bullshit, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, you didn't get affected. That's great. You've been mentally resilient enough or just turned off enough to whatever you saw that you didn't get affected. And that's awesome. Why don't we teach guys some warning signs in case they do, they can identify that. And then if they don't, they're all good. It's all good. They can see that they don't have these warning signs, but they're all good. We had Dr. Stephen Nicholas on our podcast and talked about that at length with him. He wrote a book called Warrior Servants, and it's amazing. It's specifically designed for cops and firefighters who see the things that we see to identify these traumas, work on them, and work through them. The older I get, the more I find myself like I enjoy my downtime a lot more. My mental decompression time. I've been extremely busy the last few years with H&H and doing all this kind of stuff. And I enjoy that side of it. I really am passionate about the fire service, but I do enjoy my downtime and my mental relaxation time. And I like to go, you know, my yearly vacations to Hawaii every year. And I turn everything off for 7 days. I don't do nothing but put my toes in the sand and drink ice cold Coors Lights on an island. You know, so, and that is the best week of the year. Best week of the year for me because it resets my mental, clears my mind out. I get to go tackle all life stressors in and out of the fire service again for another year. But the having something that is your release, I'm telling you right now that I don't care. Again, this is like firefighter physical fitness. You have to have something for your brain and your soul that you do besides firefighting. You have to have an outlet. I've said it before, my two outlets, and I know I talk about jujitsu a lot, but it's another passion of mine. My two outlets are jujitsu and laughter. Jujitsu and laughter, when you're in the moment, when you're laughing about something that's truly funny, you cannot think about anything else. You're just laughing because that affected you so profoundly. You're free. It's fleeting, but you're free for that moment because that affected all of you, your mental, your physical, everything. You're laughing. Because it's funny. You can't think about something that's sad while you're laughing. Right afterwards, you might, but for that moment, you were free. And then in jujitsu, when I'm engaged in a battle, because that's what it is, whether it's a 5 minute round or a 10 minute round, for that time frame, I'm free. My mind is free to do jujitsu, to be solely focused on one goal where I can't be distracted by life stressors. I can't be distracted by things that made me sad. I can't be distracted by anything else than the task at hand. And firefighting is really like that too. When you're in the midst of a firefight, right? You're whatever your assignment is, search on the line, you're on the roof, cutting the hole, whatever it is, you're solely focused. You're free. You're free from all of these other things. Unless you don't train and you suck at it, then you're stressed as shit. But if you train and you're a true badass and you know what you're doing, you are free from all the stressors around you, right? You're just focused on your task that you know how to do. It feels good, man. So that's my piece on physical fitness and mental fitness. Find something that works for you on the physical side. It doesn't matter what it is, it's something. And find something that brings you peace and freedom in your mind on the mental health side.
That was very well put, very well said. like you said, everybody has different outlets. Whatever the case may be, find it. Because yes, this job doesn't last forever. And if all you have is the glory of the fire service, man, when you leave it, when you finally retire, it's either they will find you dead in a couple days because you're bored as shit, or unfortunately, if some people take it to that where once they lose that status, they have nothing else, they end their life. So, or they walk into an empty home because the family that they had all left.
And it's
So.
a tough, the dichotomy of it is strange because this is not a job where you just show up. This ain't the bank, dude. If you're a bad bank teller, like you're just the guy that you're like, we'll put him on the far end teller where nobody goes. Fine.
Right.
If you're a shitty fireman, like you can die, you can get your partners killed, you can kill some citizens, like you can really, really have some dramatic impact on people. You should not do this job if you're not engaged. Like, if you are not into this job, get out of this job right now. And when you're here, you need to be 100% on at all times. There is no time for you to bring all your bullshit to the firehouse and have a bad day, like, because you don't know what day is coming. So it's hard to be able to say, stand by that stance, and then also stand by the stance that you got to have something outside of here, because we have all fallen into the trap. We're sitting here doing a podcast, right? I guarantee I can see behind you all the things that you've collected, your tokens and your memorabilia. It's because you love this, and you have fallen into the trap just like I have many times, where we're so engaged in this profession, the world blurs sometimes for months at a time. And all I do is firefighter stuff. I'm at work for 2 days. I'm working a ton of overtime. I used to work insane amounts of overtime when I first started. I've kind of curtailed that a little bit because I'm trying to run the business more firefighting stuff, right? But
Right.
I used to go to work and it wasn't for the money. Like I made enough money to pay my bills. I work on the West Coast. We get paid out here. So it was so I could catch jobs. It was a contact sport, dude. The more I was there, man, the more contacts I was getting. So I was going there because I had full-blown FOMO, dude, fear of missing out. I thought I was going to miss a job. So now I'm doing the business. So I'm really engaged outside of the fire department doing fire stuff, right? Now I got a podcast. Now I'm super engaged talking to firefighters all the time. It just never ends. And you gotta be able to find some balance in your life or you will be consumed by it, you know? And if things don't go right for you for whatever reason, you have no bailout plan, right? You have nowhere to go find sanctuary and find that mental release and find that reset button to come back to the fire service and be the best firefighter you can be.
That being said, it's a perfect way to end this episode. Jesse, I truly appreciate you coming on. I first have to give a shout out to Chief Bob Reiser for behind the scenes. He was like, "Hey, I got a guy you got to talk to." So, Chief Reiser, or if you're listening, I truly appreciate it. Jesse's been fantastic conversation. I mean, if you truly care about this profession, this interview should spark some conversation within yourself. And we all go through seasons of life where it's ebbs and flows, up and down. But if you are one of the ones that you just don't care, you're just here for the status, man. I mean, you're probably not going to, but you need to really have a reality check because karma works its way around. Just if you think, oh, just because I work at XYZ little small department here, this will never happen, your day's coming. Your time is coming. I hate to say it. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just a realist. Shit's coming.
For sure. We say it in our class all the time. You don't get to choose when the bell rings. You only get to choose how prepared you are when it does.
Absolutely. Jesse, like I said, man, truly appreciate you taking your time out of your day to do this.
Thank you, Danny. I really appreciate the opportunity, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you. If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.